This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Of course it is. Well, maybe it's not. It's just Tim. Teacher Hallie, Educators Amplified, Busted Pencils, Special Night, Educated Educators Talking Education, amplifying the voices of educators. It's just Teacher Hallie in the house. Teacher Joanna and Johnny Lupinacci, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. Well, you know, occasionally, sometimes there are other things that come up. And when that happens, that's what's great about having a team of four, typically on a Wednesday, is that we can still show up and really kick some, you know, butt. That would be butt, not the other thing. Teacher Hallie, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited for it to be just the two of us. I mean, let's go. We can still riff.
Hey,
right?
I think we can. I mean, typically the whole idea is that people are going like, oh my God, who's going to shut the two of them up?
Well, I'll shut you up and you shut
okay.
me up.
Okay. We'll go back and forth. You know what though, Teacher Hallie, just a reminder, you know, the Busted Pencils, it's sponsored by the Minocqua Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its crappy voucher system that hurts public schools. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. I didn't know if you'd forgotten that, Hallie.
No, thank you for the reminder.
Okay.
I just think so.
And Sherry from Horicon, thank you so much for saying hi in the text all the time. Good evening, boys and girls. Well, yeah, or boy and girls, or yeah, you know, however, us, them, everybody here. Oh, it's Busted Pencils. It's fully leaded education talk. The number is 855-752-4842. Special Educators Amplified. We've got some topics here. Teacher Hallie, but today, you know, first of all, it is a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Juneteenth, right?
Yep. Happy okay. Juneteenth.
Happy Juneteenth. Now, we're going to pose a question to the listeners out there, yeah, or anybody. But first of all, you know, we're just saying Juneteenth celebration, marking the day in Texas when slaves were read that they were free. You know, so this holiday, it's a holiday, and it is, as Anya pointed out before the show started, you know, banks are closed on Juneteenth. So it's a holiday. The question, though, in today's world that we currently occupy,
2024.
Oh, sad. If school were in session, would the public schools be acknowledging Juneteenth as a holiday? Would we be teaching the students about the history of Juneteenth? Or would we find us all wrapped up in turmoil because, you know, Juneteenth is just one of those critical race theory topics that is meant to divide us and split us up, and we're not going to go down that rabbit hole? I don't know. That's a question. You kind of posed that this morning thinking mm-hmm. about that. So if school were in session right now, would there be the holiday? I think the question, that answer is probably, yeah, it would still be there. The thing that we're more kind of intrigued or possibly throwing out to the listener for you to call in and let us know is that in 2024, with all of the attacks on what are called critical race theory, the truth, divisive concepts, mm-hmm. would Juneteenth be framed as one of those divisive concepts? And would we be having discussions about whether we should even be talking about it? I think it's a powerful question.
Oh, I do too. I mean, and I have theories myself. Mm-hmm. I think it, you know, because Wisconsin is a battleground state, I think it definitely depends on where you live, like what county you live in, how red or blue it is. Mm. You know what I mean? And how, like, and then I also think, like, So if you're in more of a blue county, I would say, yes, they'll be talking about it. There's probably an assembly or a celebration or an honoring that like the whole district does.
Right.
I feel like in a red county, it's like crickets or dependent on the teacher.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
But I won't even put it just on teachers, because what I see often living in a red county is that we have school boards now that are very much running with their power and like using it like, I don't even know, like that, like the power is all theirs. And I think that they're very good at inciting fear in professionals.
I think that where you hit on that, the question of how many teachers would feel threatened.
Right.
With the idea of going, what do I do today on Juneteenth? Can I teach this? I've now been a teacher for the past, let's just imagine, 10 years, 15 years. But in the last 3 years, I have been in classrooms and have heard school board meetings and have read news articles. And I'm not so sure I want to go down in that direction, because who knows if I might not offend somebody. And so it's that chilling effect.
Well, who knows if I'll get quote unquote caught.
Right.
And then let go.
Yeah. Wow. Right away. Caller Mark from Prairie du Sac. Mark's on the line. What's happening, Mark?
Yeah, thanks. And talking about the Civil War, it just brings back to mind. And this is going back some 50 years ago now. I did, when I was in 11th grade, and my teacher, Bernie Tomczak, lectured on the Civil War. I particularly remember the lecture when he talked about the Battle of Shiloh and the peach blossoms dropping on the dead and wounded during the Battle of Shiloh. I mean, it's just sad that, you know, American history is being forgotten, and they're hesitant to teach about it. And certainly, you know, Juneteenth, it should be a teachable moment, because it took that long, even though that they probably were full aware in Galveston. The officials were probably fully aware in Galveston of the fact that the South had lost and the Emancipation Proclamation had been made. They chose to do that until the Federals actually arrived to enforce the Emancipation Proclamation. I mean, it is just, and that should be recognized as well, because there's, you know, that it's, and the fact of the matter is, as soon as Jim Crow ended, I mean, as soon as Reconstruction ended, Jim Crow replaced it. Right. And that's something that is not taught, and Jim Crow is still with us, and its legacy is still with us.
Yeah, I think, Mark, you know, it's one of those, too. You make me think about this, and Teacher Hallie, because there's so many ways that this comes up, because you hear Mark going like, there's so much history, you know, it's not just Juneteenth. It's like, why Juneteenth? Why do we celebrate? Yep. What's the history? What was the intentionality of keeping people suppressed to even knowing that fact, that it took that long for that message to get delivered? Was there an intentionality to keep people enslaved as long as they could? You know, and that's part of the history. It's part of the story. And I think that's where you would start to find people saying, you know what? We can have Juneteenth. We can have a parade. We can have a picnic. Yep. But we're not talking about the facts, though, because those facts make me uncomfortable. And if you're a teacher out there inflicting uncomfort on people, watch out, because the history police are going to come for you. It's Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk, Educators Amplified, Teacher Hallie in the house. 855-752-4842 is the number if you want to join us, just like Mark did. Mark, really appreciate your call.
Yeah.
And you know what? Yeah, Anya, let's jump in right away. You know, you volunteered there.
I guess,
Yeah. Go for it.
So I was just sort of sitting here listening to this, and I think it's important, right? The difference between the Emancipation Proclamation, here's Abraham Lincoln saying, we're going to free the slaves, versus that news finally getting, you know, because until the news gets to these folks, unless they all know about it and subsequently choose to walk off of the where they're being kept and they could be subjected to violence, right? The Emancipation Proclamation means nothing until these folks get to leave. So this is kind of similar in a way to why there's International Holocaust Remembrance Day, but then there's also Yom HaShoah. And International Holocaust I can't get my words out today. International Holocaust Remembrance Day falls on the day actually that the Soviet military basically got to Auschwitz to liberate it. Whereas Yom HaShoah is like is more set on the day that we actually see like prisoners, incarcerated individuals of the Holocaust getting out and being able to talk about their liberation. The difference between the story of the liberator, the soldier, or the president who does the thing and gets there with the guns and the military versus, okay, and the folks, the people who needed to be freed because someone decided to make them unfree. When is their day? And it's kind of similar. It's like, I don't want to equate things to be the same.
No.
Similar.
What's similar on this one, the way we're talking about this, is the richness that comes around these stories, the history, and how you can relate, you know, going like, well, this happened and then this, and you make, you know, that's what you do. And I know, you know, Johnny, you know, past social studies teachers, both of us, I mean, this is the type of things you want to engage students in constantly is comparison. How is this like this? How is this not like this? How are they, you know, and let's talk about it. And so, think about that. We're putting forth the question then here today on Juneteenth, would there, if school were in session, would there be these critical analysis, these discussions based around the history, or would it be potentially in today, 2024, kind of just churned into, you know, hey, it's another holiday, it's another day for a parade or for us to, you know, listen to African drumming music and we're going to walk around. But other than that, though, we're not going to dare come close, Teacher Hallie.
Yeah, it makes me think about like, right, it's what we're faced now as educators is this, like, we're either allowed to be the professional, like where we can give the critical thinking and help, you know, encourage students to think and inquire on all of this stuff, right? Even when Anya was talking, like, I got chills. Like, I love thinking like that. Kids just eat that up, right? Because it's making them think. Versus, well, what fun fact can I just give about Juneteenth?
Right.
You know, like, it's really stripping away the professionalism when we have all this.
That's the question. That's the question we're asking with Educators Amplified tonight. You know, Juneteenth, if school were in session, would we be teaching it or would we be just kind of having a little bit of a fun day? Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, 855-752-4842. Give us a call. We'll be right back. Just the two of us, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education, 855-752-4842. Oh, you know, hey, we said
you can make anything into a rock song.
Hey, best music anywhere. We say it all the time. Busted Pencils, you know, you're going to get some type of surprise. Juneteenth, though, question, you know, if today, well, you know, if we were still school in session, what would the students, the teachers, the schools, the school districts be doing around this day? And we kind of framed it as this potentially problematic in 2024 because there's a story here that might make some people uncomfortable. You know, so is it Emancipation Day? Is it Freedom Day? These are questions right away, right? That somebody could go, well, wait a minute. No, you know, we can have hot dogs. I'll even allow the drumming African drummers to come in and do a little celebration, but we are not going to be talking about the specifics of Juneteenth. Why did it take so long for the message to get to the slaves? Why did it take so long for us to actually have a holiday around Juneteenth? Because those topics, if we start getting into those types of discussions, Teacher Hallie, somebody might be offended.
Yeah, and I think it's what's wild to me is that, like, it's got to be deeper than uncomfortable and offended. You know what I mean? Like, for people to want to get in positions of power and to, like, eliminate this type of conversation, this type of critical thinking, this type of conversation is just so deep to me. Like, it is to me, like, it's just an attack on, like, the profession of education and, like, really an attack on, like, the children's minds and, like, the capacities of, like, where you could go with their minds. Because, again, like I said, I just keep sitting here thinking about how this has so much to do with taking away the autonomy of teachers. And people will be like, well, I don't want my teacher to have autonomy. You know, I'm like, well, why not? Because they're professionals. Yeah. You know, like, we should want them to be able to take a conversation and route it wherever it needs to go. It actually makes me think about a shout out to a teacher I won't name because I think this was fear inducing, but my child's second grade teacher, and it was around Martin Luther King Day. So related, but not related, but essentially a conversation about racism came up, you know, with 7 and 8 year olds. Okay. Right. And students in the class shared about how they had experienced racism in their life. And so my daughter came home, who is white, and she was just, like, beside herself, you know, like, she's very empathic, where she's just like, why would people do that? That is awful, Mom. You know, and then she's like, I was crying in class. But to me, I was like, what an amazing conversation. Mm-hmm. As I'm listening to my, I don't remember if she was 7 or 8 at the time, my 8-year-old be able to tell me about what racism is in a very, like, developmentally appropriate 8-year-old way. Mm-hmm. I was like, dang, that teacher knows how to navigate this conversation. So just being who I am, I emailed her being like, thank you so much. Like, this is why I send my children to public school. Those type of conversations that just come up that you can navigate professionally is amazing. Mm. And her response back to me was like, do you mind sending this or, like, forwarding it on to the principal? Because I'm getting, like, my principal is like, basically telling me I need to send an apology to all the parents, a clarification about why I talked about it, because she's so scared that the school board will find out and then they'll be upset. You know, so that teacher was, like, mortified,
right,
and, like, walking away being scared versus, and then I did find out later from talking to other parents and then encouraging them, like, email her. You know, but it was, and they were excited that the conversation happened. But I'm just like, this is the environment that teachers are teaching in. Yeah. Of like,
so imagine, right. imagine then today, at Juneteenth, if we were, in school, and I was saying, when you're sitting there, and what you described though with your daughter in that though is exactly I can see the other parent going, how dare you send my daughter home in tears, feeling bad about being white? What in the heck are you doing
I'm interrupting you because what's wild to me is that, like, I think we're so conditioned now to think about, like, the quote unquote other parent, but I'm telling you that class of, you know, random class of probably 30 second graders, there weren't parents that were like, lock her up. You know, like, nobody complained.
Right.
You know, so that's where I just get like, why does our brain go to like, but we need to be careful about the what if situation of the one parent that might say something or might find out? You know, I'm like, it's taking away the professionalism and a true public education for kids.
And that is what you're explaining, though, is that's the reality of today, is that how much, I know, how much can be stifled without actually any harm being done or anything like that, right? You know, it's Educators Amplified Night, Teacher Hallie. Dr. Tim Slecker and Anya on the boards. Another text from Sherry from Oricon. It needs to be uncomfortable, but told. Right on. I mean, that's the reality here. We got to do that. And I just think about that, you know, because the reality of the potential that none of the parents were associated with you and your daughter and all that, like you're all fine with that, but it doesn't matter anymore because there is a story out there of a teacher who, you know, got put into the wet dungeon with the rats and made to hang out there for days as their punishment for daring to make somebody. But the story gets out that this did happen, right? And so then the anxiety response on that then is to catastrophize way above and beyond the reality that'll typically go. And then you stifle yourself. And people say, well, what's the problem? If it's true, you don't have, it's like, no, you understand this silences people very powerfully without actually doing any type of harm. I remember that first couple of years teaching, have some, you know, it's like, you're going to get in trouble, Tim. You're going to get in trouble. And I kept wondering, I'm like, how do you know that? Where is the evidence that trouble has occurred? And it must have been so horrible because we have no evidence of anybody having ever gotten in trouble. But the fear of getting in trouble has created such a backlash that people go, hey, you know, and I would even say, I'm like, when did this person get in trouble? What happened that was so horrific that the rest of you now have decided that we're going to actually warn people about what happens when they get in trouble? Juneteenth, Busted Pencils, Educators Amplified, Fully Leaded Education Talk, all those things. Educated Educators Talking Education, 855-752-4842. Do a little bit more Juneteenth, but hey, the other thing though too, if you're an administrator out there and you're hiring a consultant, we want to talk to you when we get back. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk, Educated Educators Talking Education Wednesday, Educators Amplified in the house, Teacher Hallie, Teacher Joanna, you know, and Johnny tonight. Other things have come up, and that is, you know, again, family first all the time. Teacher Hallie, though, you know, Juneteenth today, we kind of posed the beginning of the show to kind of, you know, if school were in session today, you know, what would be happening in schools? Would there be teaching about Juneteenth, about the history, about why it took so long for the message to get to those slaves in Texas? Would we be engaging, or would it be simply in today, 2024? Hey, you know what? I don't want to make anybody uncomfortable, so we're just going to have hot dogs and announce that it's a holiday.
Yep. I mean, gosh, it bothers me that that's like how it, you know, like how things roll, you know. I also think about, like, I always think about, because we're in this type of environment right now, like, is there anyone that's there to like defend or be like, nope, this is what we should be doing? You know what I mean? Like, it's very based on like, here's what we should do, here's what we shouldn't do, versus like just what's felt mentally appropriate. Like, is anyone going to come out here and try to like defend that, you know? And to me, I could be like, oh, that could be like an administrator's role to, you know, to preserve the autonomy or preserve the professionalism of the educators in the classroom. But I don't know if they view that as their role or not. you know?
Well, that's a whole other question that you bring up there, too. What does an administrator believe their role is in these situations? You know, lots of administrators, and let's use that word, and some people, you mean the leadership? Potentially, administrators, yeah, are sometimes by default the leaders. However, if you were a leader in this situation, I'm pretty sure you would, yeah, advocate for the autonomy. Potentially, though, this is one of those situations where would district administration want to consult an outside source to potentially give them guidance?
Yeah. I mean, so this is what's crazy about a school is that like the hierarchy is stacked, right? Where it's like teachers at, well, students at the bottom, then teachers, then building administration, then district administration, you know, and district administration more and more. I used to think like superintendent was at the top, but I'm seeing more and more with these cultures of like fear, essentially, that they're like, kind of superintendents are kind of like not lowering themselves very low, but kind of being like, we work with the cabinet of the pupil services director and the athletic director and the, I made up this title director, you know, so that it's like this little team of people. So no one can say like, I said it.
Yeah.
And then they can be like, oh, we hired this consultant who said dot, dot, dot. Right. And so what's really just has been very interesting to me as an educator is seeing how many consultants, like the superintendent gets to hire a consultant. The pupil services director gets to hire a consultant. The curriculum and instruction director gets to hire a consultant. You know, like we have consultants for all of our quote unquote leaders. And right. What is that about?
When's the last time you as a teacher got to hire a consultant?
Well, sometimes I'll be like, I don't need a consultant.
No, I know. I just had to throw that out there. I love Anya's comment. Where she put in there.
Does someone get to be the director of making up titles if there's all these titles going around? And if there is, who is their consultant? Where do they go for their info?
Right. I mean, schools are so successfully marketed to that, you know, Google has a consultant, you know, like for an example, but also just like, oh, I'm a consultant of, are you having trouble with how to talk with your educators about special education? I'm a consultant for that. Oh, are you having difficulties with your financials in your district? Oh, I'm a consultant for that.
Okay, but you're making me think, though, on this now, too, about that, because I start to wonder about, do you need a consultant, or shouldn't that be your job responsibility, and shouldn't you have the professional authority and autonomy to be making those types of decisions? And then, you know, we're talking about school budgets, you know, where the heck does all this money come from the consultants? Never, never, never do I hear that there's not enough money for the consultant. There's not enough money for, you know, the school band. There's not enough money for the field trip. There's not enough money for food. There's not enough money for teacher raises. Mm-hmm. Okay, but the consultant class, and I will say I have worked as a consultant though myself, and so I'm I know, yeah, you know. But asking the question, though, at what point should you be the one responsible for the work, have the authority and have the leadership skills to actually enact tough decisions that you shouldn't need a consultant? And if you need a consultant, is that really just evidence you're not really good?
Yeah, I don't know. I would love if a district administrator or even a building administrator called in and gave us perspective on like, one, have you ever had a consultant? Two, what do you think that your role is in all of this? Like, you know, because right from my lens, I'm like, we hire a superintendent at, you know, like $150,000 plus. And I think that's I mean, right. That was really lowballing it. Mm-hmm. And then how much is a consultant, mm-hmm. you know, that like you, that they hire in for themselves, but yet all I ever hear is an educator, like the most expensive line items in the budget is educators, mm-hmm. you know? So like, that's why we can never pay all the educators because they're so expensive. And I would love to like proportion it out of mm-hmm. like, if there's X number of people in your district office, how much of your funding, what percentage goes to that and their consultants mm-hmm. versus, you know, whatever. There's got to be, you know, I'm sure unions have done it and, you know, figured it out. But it's actually terrifying, you know, mm-hmm. that like when schools have budget issues, that what gets cut is things that affect students versus right. things that affect one superintendent and right. their consultant or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you think about that, you know, how do we make budget decisions? And right. yeah, some of those things, it's like, well, you know, yeah, we can do away with funding the kindergarten field trip this year. Right. And you're like, well, why are we making that decision? Well, I can't cut my consultant.
Right.
You know, and, right. And again, and you, like you frame this, Teacher Hallie, by too saying, you know, and if you are a district administrator out there and you're listening to us right now, you know, give us a call, 855-752-4842. Either, you know, validate, verify what we're talking about, challenge us on it, because we're really, you know, we're asking mm-hmm. these questions because, as Teacher Hallie points out, you know, it always seems like, particularly when it comes down to the budget. Mm-hmm. And if the budget's tight, which, hey, guess what? It's a public school. I don't know that there hasn't ever been anything but a tight budget. When you mm-hmm. make those decisions, and this is a question that, you know, I kind of posed before this show. Are the consultants' salaries, should they be disclosed as part of the financial situation that a school is in? And if we did know mm-hmm. that, would we say, well, you know what? It's not that much money. Yeah, I guess we should cut the kindergarten field trip. I mean, how are these decisions made? So lots of issues coming up here as we bring this forward, lots of different ways to throw it. But, you know, are you an administrator? Do you need a consultant? And if you do need a consultant, is that really an indication that you're not that qualified that you actually have to hire a consultant? Or is it an indicator that you're not that great of a leader and you just want to hire somebody who can tell you that here's what you need to say, and then you can then go to the masses or the team and say, the consultant said? Or even this possibility of going, it's just like, you know, how do we make decisions around making important declarations going all the way back to the Juneteenth? Yeah, mm-hmm. I could see this situation being, you know, a district school, an administrator, a group of leaders, the curriculum director, the director of making up titles, all getting together and going, you know what? You know how we could solve this problem? We'd hire a consultant.
Yeah, I can see, you know, from my experience in the current climate and culture that we're in, it is a lot of like people in the quote unquote leadership roles pointing mm-hmm. to others or pointing to the team of like, so instead of it being like, I individually made this decision, if we hire consultants or work as a team or whatever, we can say things like, oh, well, the consultant recommended this, mm-hmm. you know, like it almost gives that like pass or mm-hmm. that like you can't ever pin anybody down to get to the root of the issue. And I think that's why we're just, these issues just aren't going away and we're just taking Band-Aids to try to cover things up. Mm-hmm. Or like when teachers are like, I'd love to do something on Juneteenth that's meaningful, mm-hmm. it turns into like, well, let me ask X, Y, or Z, or the team decided this, or the consultant sent out the communication, and that's what we're doing in our district. You know, it just allows this like I guess, land of zero responsibility or zero like ownership or like zero, like I can just like wipe my hands.
That's why you pay good money for the ability to offload the decision making. That's what's happening in a lot of these situations.
It feels like.
Yeah. You know, and I'll come back and say, I have worked and I still do some work as a consultant. So anybody who's out there listening going, why the heck is Tim? I'm like, I hire myself in situations to come in and, you know, it's more around a group and putting together strategic planning and the idea. And so, you know, I see places where I understand why you do have consultants. But I can point out though what you just said though, Hallie, which is, you know what? A lot of times we hire consultants to make the hard decisions so that we don't have to be the ones to deliver the bad news. And that I'm framing that. So, you know, if you're listening out there and you know the situation I'm describing, 855-752-4842, you know, you've been part of consultanted. There, I just made up that word, consultanted, you know, so, you know, and possibly even to the point where you find yourself being told by your boss, hey, sorry, but the consultant said, and this is the decision we're making. And boy, how does that feel to be told by somebody who's a leader? And I say leader, and I'm not really sure you're a leader when you offload decision making to consultants. Hallie, before we break, I see you got something.
This just sounds like a really crazy ball of hierarchy and bureaucracy to me. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about power with versus power over. If we had a power with structure, things could be so much better.
You know? The old distributed leadership, my goodness, sharing decision-making. Right. When you were talking about a team, though, in fact, when we come back, I want to throw that out there because guess what? You do have qualified people to make these decisions. We're going to talk about them when we get back. More Busted Pencils next. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Wednesday night, educators amplified in the house. Teacher Hallie, Dr. Tim Slicker, Anya. Yeah, the three of us, we're hanging out on Juneteenth talking about, yeah, what will we do on Juneteenth if we were in school? And then the possibility of, well, this would be a decision we would turn over to a consultant to make. And Hallie, you know, you pointed out to me one of the things that I think, and I've seen this, the use of consultants to essentially keep hierarchy in place. Mm-hmm. Because you were talking about a team, right? And so I'm imagining a school, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm imagining three kindergarten teachers, three first grade teachers, three second grade teachers, a speech pathologist, a special education coordinator, all the way up through fifth grade. That's a team of really smart people who are all qualified to be an educator, to be a decision maker. Why don't we ask you guys to do this, and why do we offload this to a consultant? And I'm posing that question because, is it because we don't want to give you the autonomy to be decision makers?
I mean, that's how I interpret it. Honestly. But like, I'm open, you know. Funny enough, I kept using the word team, and now I'm going to correct myself because the word I always am told in education for what I would define as a team, but the word that's always used for district I'm in, those roles that work together, is the cabinet.
Oh, the cabinet.
The cabinet made this decision, which to me, I'm like, why don't they just say team? Like, it's a whole nother example to me, I guess, of the whole like, but we are the cabinet.
Well, but it creates separation, like you just said, because it's the cabinet. It's the executive group. It's it's the president's advisory council.
Yes.
And you're going, well, wait, why does the president have an advisory council that doesn't include any of us who are living it every day?
Right.
Right.
You know, this hierarchy system has got to go.
you're like, how do I get on the advisory council? It's like, well, you don't. If you're a teacher, if you're actually, if you're part of the team, you don't get to be part of the decision making. We hire the decision making out to the group that is the authority. Oh my God, it gets so messy. Yes. Sounds like we're having a little bit of a conversation about what does it mean to be a leader? What does it mean to be an administrator? I think those are very, very, very different. And I will frame it this way by saying leaders should have some good administrative skills, but being an administrator does not make you a leader. And I see way too many administrators, and I'm saying across multiple different occupations, different categories, not just in schools, but that whole idea of I'm now an administrator. And the assumption is that you've been appointed a leader. And it's like, sorry, to me, leadership is earned.
Well, and I think it has to do too with like values or like philosophy. Of like, is it just like, because I am an administrator, quote unquote, at the top, I am named the leader versus how I treat, you know, everybody within the school or, you know, corporation or whatever, like how I operate, how, you know, we choose to work together. Is that more what defines someone having leadership skills?
Now, and I'm posing it though to really, you know, I obviously people are going, Tim, you obviously have an opinion on this. I do. I think that they're, I do. I've just because I've been, you know, guess what? I now get to potentially cite my age as the potential that I have some thoughts and wisdom and seen some things. And a lot of high up administrators, as you point out, Teacher Hallie, over my 30 plus years of being in multiple places and multiple things, is that they're not always in any way, and some of them are horrible leaders. It is just because of the position that they are assumed a leader, and realizing there's a huge difference between being in charge and at the top and being a leader. And maybe this is even to that question you start going, why is it that you might have a leader who doesn't need a consultant? I don't know.
Right. And I also think about then, I mean, what we haven't talked about, but I'll bring back full circle because I think it has to do with our Juneteenth conversation too, about also part of this hierarchy in schools is a school board. And like, do we consider school board members leaders? Do we consider them more just a position of power? And like, depending on who's there, what they do. I mean, I know school boards get to hire consultants too, you know, right? Or even legal, you know? So like, it's just, I mean, it's a very layered, like, issues within education related to this concept of leadership.
Oh, and you think about it though too. We got here by talking about Juneteenth. Juneteenth. Right. If we were, you know, fully in a school right now in session, if we were in session, would we be even celebrating Juneteenth? Oh, and we got a text from Jim in Appleton. Different terms. The difference between a diplomat and a bureaucrat. Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm talking about, you know, a leader versus an administrator, a diplomat versus a bureaucrat. And there's a connotation that one's better than the other people. Yes, there is a connotation that one is preferable above the other. And I'm okay with that because I've now seen bureaucrats and administrators that are really horrible at being diplomatic and providing a model of leadership. Sorry, you know, that's just the reality. And, you know, is that the reason, though, sometimes too, if you're hiring a consultant, is it just because you yourself don't have the skill set? I think that's one issue. Or is it also because the skill set you don't have really is leadership, and so therefore you're hiring somebody to make the hard decisions where a real leader would make those hard decisions. When it comes to Juneteenth, a real leader, if we were in school, we would be doing this. Busted pencils, Teacher Hallie. Man, Educators Amplified. Love it. All right, everybody. Have a great night. See y'all tomorrow. Thanks, Teacher Hallie.
Bye. Thank you.